Continental Shelf is Fred De Garre's fifth poetry collection and was selected by the Poetry Book Society as its 2009 summer choice. Comprised of three distinct parts, the book traces a journey from his youth in Guyana through a powerful elegiac exploration of the shootings at Virginia Tech University to the reflective closing section, which gives its title to the book. Although Fred De Garre spent his childhood in Guyana, he was born in London in 1960 and he trained as a psychiatric nurse before reading African and Caribbean studies at the University of Kent in Canterbury. He now lives in Virginia, USA. He is the author of several prize-winning novels and plays. His last collection, Bill of Rights, Chateau Press, was shortlisted for the 1998 T.S. Eliot Prize. During summer 2009, Fred De Garre undertook a UK tour to celebrate the publication of Continental Shelf, with events in Manchester, Aberdeen, at the South Bank Centre, London, Ledbury Poetry Festival, and elsewhere. In this podcast, he discusses the inspiration behind his new collection, interspersed with highlights from his tour.
The return. You can never go back, you know, keep in the same place twice, all that kind of stuff. But you must always try and return in writing. It's a nostalgic gesture, initially, and then the second step is a sentimental danger, and you have to try and avoid both. You kind of undermine the stuff you're talking about by problematizing it a little bit. That sounds academic for saying, never trust a sentiment, but always trust a feeling. A sentiment is when you cry into your soup, a feeling is when you eat your soup before crying into it. And the other thing too I was trying is the accordion, when you kind of bring it out like that, it's at its best. It's like a fiction, a novel. But when it's most compressed, it feels like what poetry should be when you kind of bring it in. And I wanted the poem to kind of hold that moment. There's no note there. It's the end of notes. There are many images, but one I want to pick on. I was young and I have a distinct memory of a guy selling ice before electricity, which arrived and I was there. So he comes along with a cart. You order a bit of ice and you say how big, and then he will take a pick and a hammer and he'll hit the ice for you and cut that piece off precisely for you and you pay him. Now, as you know, the ice is like gold. You're going to wrap it up and went into the house, put it in a dark room and so on. But as he was doing his flint thing to get it off for you, we were kids leaning close to the ice to get a little piece of the bits coming off as he cut it. And it was a distinct burn of the bits coming off, and that was my memory. All I had in my head is just inclining towards a block of ice, closing my eyes because I was scared, and then feeling this fleck on my face and going, ah, that's all. And then after that image, the cartman went away, and we had electricity. Imagine being given electricity, and then it's taken away by the power cut. The refrigerator is in there, and there's no power to drive it. It becomes this warm kind of coffin where you just go in and die and close the door behind you. But we had that too. We had electricity arrive in Guyana. The IMF said, here's a loan for another piece of electricity. The government took the loan and ran off. And then the electricity had a power cut. So we actually had electricity. We enjoyed the kind of benefits of the electrical life. And suddenly they watched these bulbs and took, it's gone. And that's what happened to us in the 70s after the IMF came in and gave a lot of loans to the bureaucratic government that took those loans and didn't finish the road, didn't deliver the final power that would power the, whatever happens locally with infrastructure. So we kind of went through the ice man coming, we went it away, the electricity arrived, the bulbs shone, the bulbs died, the fridges were empty. And I tried to get all that in this little poem. The return. Whether titter stands for sister or no, no more ice pick and its flint on the blockhead of ice. Whether mama duck stands for grandma Dorothy or no, no more right hand cutlass swings at the left hand's juice and jelly. Whether Cooperative Republic Village number 162 stands for Airy Hall or no, no more full frontal kiss of cars on the pronounced curves of the S Road, that's the only road into town. Whether Guinness or Sinking Toe or Soursop or Jamoon stand for fruits or no, no more sprints from the house at the first smell of rain in nothing but our peeled skin. Whether to line is to hang and to gaff or lavish is to shoot the breeze or no. No more shielding the wick of the oil lamp as I duck under the top half while I toe open the bottom half of the back doors, half doors. Whether back down stands for coca or no. No more going Dutch for a day trip to Kike overall where the Essequibo spreads like a sea where the Mazaruni and the Cayuni part mineral company. where the Kaichoura falls for a record 741-foot single drop, or no more eye turn, head spin, shuffle of up and down, so that the falls rise and the forest canopy bows to the floor. Whether Guyana is Canaima or no, whether I stands for you and me or no.
The first section of Continental Shelf, entitled Local Colour, consists of 35 poems about Fred's childhood in Guyana. He conjures up a sensuous world of characters and stories that is distinctly Caribbean. On June 16, 2009, Fred Tagar and fellow Carcanet poet Kai Miller from Jamaica gave a joint reading at the Wordsworth Trust in Grasmere. Here they discussed their experiences of the Caribbean and the literature of the region.
I remember years ago when I just wrote my first collection, Kingdom of Empty Bellies, I wrote a very excited email to Fred, because I was reading through his collection, Mamadat, and I had this whole sequence of poems, Church Woman, and I was kind of reading Fred's collection and writing the poems at the same time. So I just wrote him a kind of embarrassing fan letter. And so tonight really is the first time I'm actually meeting him face to face. But there probably are natural conversations that happen just because he was one of the writers I was reading.
Fred Tagar and Kai Miller have both made significant contributions to contemporary Caribbean literature across various genres. When asked about the similarities between their work, Fred, currently a professor of Caribbean literature at Virginia Tech University, discussed the historical influences which he feels have shaped the literature of that region.
That's an interesting question, because I mean, what it teases out is this idea of a colonial pattern in the Caribbean as well, that's shared by the islands, in terms of obsessions and the things that happen to their bodies if you're in a space where the history is very similar and repeated island by island. And over the Caribbean, you know, four different languages, and we're separated by those languages, you know, the European languages initially. The pattern of colonization is the same, in terms of how the extraction of wealth, subjugation of the local person and so on, building of certain citadels, one botanical garden, many prisons, and so on. And I think when we come to write, those are the things that play on us. So I'm not surprised that there are similarities, well, at least in terms of the utterance. Calypso. This is not really a calypso. I can't sing, I can't dance, so I write. Not really. I did carnival, as everyone does. Thought I'd write a calypso that tried to honor the way in which they work. But the single memory for me is this idea of stuttering as a child and trying to overcome it in Guyana. Calypso. I stuttered in Georgetown, Guyana in 1966 and was so ashamed I did not speak even when spoken to. Until I heard one song that ran, I don't know, a long O in that second no, converted doubt to wonder itself and continued, why they got people bad-minded so. Repeating the couplet erased all doubt, that independence year of overproof rum and absolutes. The singer groaned how his efforts only invited envy, how ingrained failure made a stranger of success. Then he launched his boast. I got the rhythm, three times no less, adding his own made-up word, what a cheek, tan-tan-tilism. That extra tan stretched, creolized, iron-smoothed my creased tongue. Was I alone in the capital in not joining the country's club of bad minds, ranged against singer and song after it stuck all year in the charts? Everything about 1966, 6 feet below sea level, drained from me. Everything except that little strain lodged in my skull and always budding on my tongue. It teases, it taunts, it tantalizes.
While the local colour section of Continental Shelf reflects on the landscape and events of Fred Tagar's youth in Guyana, his elegies sequence is dedicated to the 33 people who died during the Virginia Tech shootings in 2007. The loss of unique and particular individuals is mourned in a series of 21 sonnets, which scrutinize American civil life and demonstrate the capacity of poetry to deal with the grief of a community. Here, Fred discusses the pressures of poetic utterance in the face of tragedy and his choice of the sonnet form.
I was teaching a Caribbean literature class, and a student called Erin Peterson in my Caribbean literature class went to her French class, and she was killed in her French class. So we had to meet the next day. That evening I called my mum and told her, you know, terrible stuff had happened and what to do, and she said, I'm going to come to your class and cook a Caribbean breakfast for them. So make sure you tell them to come along as usual. So she tried to organize a flight from Florida up to Virginia, and we got together, and Erin wasn't there. When my mom came in and cooked this Caribbean meal, and we began to break the bread, you know, the students had that meal, and we didn't say very much. But when they left, they asked me to about what I thought about the whole event, and the pressure of speech became very important to have to write to. The loss of Erin Peterson, literally, in a kind of elegiac way, and then in a wider way, because of the availability of guns and so on, and being in America, coming from the UK, the Gulf War was raging, a wider imperative, more historically based, began to pressure the work, and I very soon left the elegy form, or at least widened it out, to include a conversation with America from a UK and Guyanese vantage point, seeing America as a responsibility at the time as a world power. It's changed for many reasons. Obama isn't, and it's trying some things with democracy and reversing some things. So the poetry was arguing back to Bush's regime and then trying to assess the last 10 years and my own presence there in relation to Guyana and the UK. And I began to do something I do in reading, which is to look at the summit form through the ages and try to write my own revisions of those. So the proto summit would bring in some kind of speech forms, a calypso, instead of quatrains going on with four beats, tectonic beats, it would be that you had 3 4s, and then this closing couplet might just be maybe another quatrain to show the summit not quite ending but spilling over. Or, like in Ben Jonson's poem, an amazing poem to my first son, I think it's called, and his son died at 7, and he wrote this poem that got to 12 lines. But when you read it again and again and again, it reads like a sonnet. It has the power and the pressure of a sonnet. That's a proto-sonnet for you. It mimics the sonnets. It's like fly fishing. You go for the stream that I can't fly fish, but I imagine from the movies I've seen when they send the thing out. You hit the same kind of 30-yard thing and you swing that body in that line. And the sonnet's a bit like that. The proto-sonnet kind of has that feel and that length. So, and then there are many writers I was in conversation with, Paul Muldoon and a few others from emails. My concern was to get to land in Guyana and belong, land in UK, any city, and have a place, be in America, rural or urban, north or south, and have a place. So the sonnet had to work over time with these three geographical locations.
Fred Degar reads from Elegies, Part 3, Section 1.
Police speckle campus lawns, their cars parked ostentatiously, illegally, public exhibits in an open-air museum of broken hearts. Their gun metal charm sets me on edge. The ones in plain clothes stand out even more. Their inconspicuous intent is itself conspicuous. Bless them for their crude cover of us in our raw state. We believe in nothing but slowness when in the open, for the sun as it slips cloud cover startles with its glare, and no man, woman or child looks quite so lost as when left to idle before an impromptu memorial, by an impulse that stays one step ahead of thinking. What am I thinking when I catch myself in its stasis? That love's cloak keeps us warm in a crisis.
Finally, Fred explains the significance of the book's title, Continental Shelf, and describes how the experience of moving between Guyana, the UK, and the US has influenced his poetry.
Continental Shelf. It should be shelves. Only because whenever I come back to the UK and go to the States or Guyana, there's a time when you're coming in if the plane is low enough and you can see the island beginning before it begins. The same in South America, and it's underwater, the land, and so I became intrigued by this submerged aspect of those places as I began to get familiar with the three of them. 10 years in Guyana, left here when I was 2, came back when I was 12, and then in the States. What I'll try and do is
try and get the three to speak to each other in the poems as much as possible to give you a sense of that roving landscape.
I'd like to close with Demerara Sugar and thank Carpinet for a beautiful book. The cover is by a wonderful artist from Guyana. There are a number of Guyanese Caribbean painters who are painting the interior and speaking in a kind of ecological world about resources and so on. Demerara Sugar. In neat sachets where each grain flows with crystal clarity in a slalom of Swiss blinds ready for my tongue. Sugar, cut by hand-slinging cutlets that half an eye kept on any snake wrapping its way around cane fields. Cane pressed for its last ounce of sap, boiled down to molasses that is cane marrow if cane were bones, broken from fields for a bone feast. Demerara, whose east coast raised me from a mere stalk to stand straight, to stand tall no matter what current. Help me find your grain, your flow, and Demerara, sweeten me, so my art keeps your river's caveat, your sense of cane fields bathed in sweat.
With special thanks to Manchester Central Library and the Wordsworth Trust, Fredegar's Continental Shelf, priced £9.95, is available from the Carcanet website, Amazon, and all major bookshops.